Okay, we will begin with the daily prayers on page 34. We'll say refuge in English. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly.
By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings.
And then the Four Immeasurables. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering.
May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies.
And then on the bottom of page 37, we will do Chen Reishig's mantra and Green Tower's mantra. Oh, we can chant the Four Immeasurables. I didn't realize that was there. So right above Chen Reishig's mantra is the Four Immeasurables, and we'll chant that. Jem, Jem, Tom,
Jewa, Jum, Jewa, Gyur, Jum,
Jem, Par,
Gyur, Sik, Do
Chen Reishig's mantra, 8 times Chen Reishig's mantra. Green Tower's mantra 7 times.
Om Jare Tu Jare Tu Re Soha. 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 Okay, the children may be excused, and if you're child is here for the first time today, please go with them out into the lobby and Miss Aaron will get you pointed in the right direction. Let's begin with a little bit of meditation. Begin by checking your posture. If you're sitting on a cushion, sit a little bit to the front of the cushion. If you're sitting in a chair, don't lean all the way back. Most important part of the posture is that your back is a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Your head is straight on your shoulders, maybe a couple degrees in front of the vertical, but not tilted to one side or the other. Eyes are either slightly open or lightly closed. Jaw is relaxed with the lips lightly touching. Your shoulders are down, not up around your ears, and slightly back, so your chest is open. Your arms are away from the sides of your torso, and you can either put your right and left hands on your knees, or right hand on left with thumbs touching slightly below the level of the navel. Legs are in a position that you find comfortable and non-distracting. So take just a second, scan your posture if there's discomfort or something that doesn't seem quite right, address that now so that during the meditation, the posture isn't really an issue. It's self-sustaining and stable. The point of the meditation is not to be concentrating on your posture. The posture should be a support, a stable support for the meditation. And we'll begin just by taking 3 deep breaths from the abdomen with the stomach expanding on the in-breath and then contracting on the out-breath so our diaphragm is pulled down and our lungs are completely filled. And you can allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern. And we begin the meditation, as always, by setting our motivation. Whatever motivated us to come to Kadampa Center this morning is fine. But let's take a minute and generate as much as we can the bodhicitta motivation. The thought that even doing something as simple as sitting and meditating for a few minutes is done with the intention that I am training my mind, developing my qualities of compassion and wisdom, so that I can be of benefit to all sentient beings. Not the way we normally think, but that's the most powerful motivation. So see if you can generate that, even if it seems difficult. And having set our motivation, we can begin the actual meditation, simple breathing meditation. We place our consciousness, our awareness, our mind on the movement of the breath in and out through the openings of our nostrils. Nothing more than that. Mind aware of breath. We're not going to count the breath. We're not going to visualize it. We're not going to describe it to ourselves. We're just going to deal with direct perception of the breath. So that mind is in essence inseparable from the experience of breath, the physical sensation of breath moving in and out. There is no duality, no separation, direct perception. And inevitably, we'll notice that our mind is not on the breath, so we just bring it back over and over and over again. And that's the process of meditation. And you can relax your concentration. I'd like to welcome everyone to Kadampa Center this morning. My name is Robbie Watkins. I've been a member here for about 20 years, and I will be facilitating the discussion this morning. I know we have some newcomers here. I wanted to particularly introduce three visitors from an FPMT center in northern Italy, Luciano, Graziella, and Alessandro. If you all could stand up, welcome to Kadampa Center. Alessandro is going to be in school at Duke. Unfortunately, his parents are leaving tomorrow, but we're very glad to have you here. Anyone else here for the first time this morning? Oh, okay, a couple people. Yeah, glad to have you here. I am leading the discussion this morning in the absence of our resident teachers, Geshe Gelick and Geshe Sampo, and along with the almost 200 other FPMT centers around the world, FPMT being the worldwide organization that we're part of. Today we're celebrating International Sangha Day. Does anybody know what determines if the teachings of the Buddha are alive within a country? There's a very specific standard. Okay. How many? Four. Okay. If you have four robed Sangha within the borders of a country, the teachings of the Buddha are said to be alive there. Here in Raleigh, just in Raleigh, North Carolina, we can rejoice that we've already exceeded that standard. This is not something that just happens by chance, but it's through good karma that we've created to be in the presence of Sangha, and the good karma that the Sangha members themselves have created to be able to take robes in this lifetime. We have Geshe Gelick, our first resident teacher, Geshe Sampo, our other resident teacher. They're both out of town right now. Venerable Chunyi was the first member of the center to take robes. She is deceased, but we now have Venerable Lamo, who was here at the earlier session, Venerable Trukki, who's not here today, Venerable Kondo, and Venerable Tendron, who's going to be returning to the center shortly. So the women have really stepped up, but the men are falling behind. So we need a few guys to think about ordination to support this group. But anyway, today we're celebrating International Sangha Day. We use the term Sangha in a very generic sense to refer to everyone that comes to the center and is part of the community. But today we're specifically talking about our robe Sangha members who have taken vows. And just to clear up a couple possible misperceptions, they are not employed by Kadampa Center. They are not employed by the FPMT. They are students on the path who have decided that taking robes is the best way to further their studies. And they are responsible for supporting themselves. Some have jobs, some don't. The International Mahayana Institute, IMI, is a branch of the FPMT that is the umbrella organization for Western Sangha members. But IMI has no source of funding other than donations of people who see the value of having Sangha members in your community. So all the donations that go in the boxes today, the donation boxes today, will be forwarded to the International Mahayana Institute. You can make your checks out either to Kadampa Center or to IMI. Both, they're tax deductible in both cases. And certainly, it's always nice to give offerings to our Sangha members. Today is certainly an especially auspicious day to make offerings if you'd like to do so. And anytime you want to make an offering to a Sangha member, you can just put it in an envelope, put it on the table by the Geshe's chairs, or put it on the desk for the other Sangha members. You can put a nice little card with someone suggested a picture of a kitty cat on it or something. Even though it seems like the right thing to do, it's probably not best to put a card with a picture of the Buddha or a holy object in there, because then the Sangha member has to keep that card forever and ever, and they wind up with a big collection of cards. So just a nice little card with a note is always appropriate, today or any other time. And a thank you, anything like that, for what they're doing is always appreciated. But we're going to start the discussion. I'm going to turn the mic over to Venerable Kondo. She is going to tell us a little bit about her decision to take robes, and then she'll entertain appropriate questions from the group. She's quite shy and retiring, so cut her a little slack. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Takes
a minute to warm up.
Yeah. Just like me.
Are we on?
Yes.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Okay, well, first of all, Venerable Chuki sends her regrets. She has been consistently ill for years at this point, but today was a particularly bad day, and so she couldn't be with us. And so she wanted to thank the Kadampa Center for all the support that is offered to Sangha, and hopefully she'll be back again with us soon. I also wanted to mention that Venerable Tendrin-Law, who will be returning, her father died yesterday afternoon at 1:30 in the afternoon. And so please keep him and the family in your prayers, and Geshe-la is already on board with prayers for his good rebirth. So thank you. I wanted to start there with our two absent Sangha. This, hopefully, you know, Robbie's got the hook to cut me off, because I thought, oh, this will only be 2 or 3 minutes, and then I thought of this and this and this and this, and of course it Popsy Dungrode. But what the story about is really, really kind of my edited version of causes and conditions coming together for me to ordain. What I'm going to try to do pretty briefly is say kind of what it was like, what happened, and a little bit about what I try to have it to be now. It was, when I think back, it was pretty obvious I was always going to be a nun. I was born
Catholic.
That's
what Venerable Lama said also, yes.
It seems to be a vocation. So, and I wanted to be a contemplative nun, like Thomas Merton was a contemplative monk. But then, of course, I turned 15, 16, and was certainly a child of the 60s. I'm almost 66 years old. So I discovered sex, drugs, rock and roll, and anything else one could become addicted to. And so a really important part of my story that won't make sense to a lot of people is that addiction drove my life for many, many, many years, whether it be addiction to study, addiction to drugs, addiction to whatever seemed interesting at the time. I will be very public about this. I'm a recovering alcoholic with 29 years of sobriety. And the reason I say this is that because it's part of my journey. The only reason I'm sober today is because of commitment to maintain a fit spiritual condition. So in 2001, a neighbor said, I heard this really wacky, crazy, great nun is going to be talking at a place called the Kadampa Center. Do you want to go? And I said, sure. Well, for anybody that knows her, everybody knows I'm talking about Venerable Rabina. My neighbor never went back. I never left. Okay. So she was my iron hook. And within 5 days, I had taken refuge and taken the Bodhisattva vows. What was I thinking? And then started showing up at teachings because of other commitments. I didn't do Discovering Buddhism. I just started going to listen to Geshe Gelug. So Rabina got me here. Geshe Gelug kept me here. Geshe Gelug has been a wise, compassionate, and amazing support and guide to me since I showed up. I began dancing around ordination probably in 2004, 2006. I talked to Geshe-la, talked to Rabina, and of course I wanted to be like some of the other nuns that have ordained here and rush off to India and ordain. And Geshe-la goes, no, 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 don't do that. And he said, well, it's not fair to yourself and it's not fair to the community because, unfortunately, in the West, you've got to be able to take care of yourself. There, we don't have a structure yet, or if we ever will have a structure that, you know, provides food, clothing, shelter, and housing and whatever for Western Sangha. And so he said, okay. I said, okay. What a relief. But then, of course, I love the ways of the world. I like cooking, I like gardening, I like guys, you know, I like movies, I just like fun. And so that kind of went out the window. But it was very clear that even if I was serious about it, until I could retire, and have an income that allowed me to just be a nun, it wouldn't happen. But I kept coming to the center. I kept showing up. I cooked for retreats. I pretty much never had an official role here. I was more show up, tell me what to do, and I'll try to do it, and then I'll run away and go back to my hole. I'm a little rebellious, so organizations are a little hard for me. So when I retired in 2009, and this is where the story gets serious, I had four aspirations. One was to study and serve the Dharma. Two was to grow food for myself and others. Three was to be on, in, or near water as much as possible. And four was to have enough time and energy for anyone that showed up at my door who needed to sit and have a cup of tea. I wasn't too busy and I could just sit and be present. How this happened was, and again, this part of the story is the kindness of our mothers. I would not be in robes, so it was not for the kindness of our mothers. My mother introduced me to Thomas Merton. In 2006, 3 years before I retired, my mother died and left me a little money. Two things happened with that money. One, I was able to help Geshe-la out. And two, within 3 months of helping Geshe-la out, a place on the St. Lawrence River in the Thousand Islands, which is as close to Pure Lands on Earth as I know, I was able to buy. It was basically a trailer, so we're not talking exciting. It was a trailer on the river, but it enabled me to do what I wanted to do, which was to be on, in, and near the water as much as possible. I'd been to Lama Zopa, Light of the Path, and he had given a crystal away, not crystal, an etching away. And so I sewed this into a little tiny bag that I wore on my neck when I swam, so it went over all the little beings that I swam over. And I would tell Geshe-la this, and he would just laugh and roll his eyes. You know, I had a huge garden, 30 by 90 feet. I fed 10 people, usually older people that couldn't garden anymore. I did that for 5 years. My house became a place where people had tea a lot. What I didn't do a lot of was really study and serve the Dharma because I was too busy swimming, growing vegetables, and laying on my couch watching the clouds go by and take naps. And then I talked to Geshe-la about, I avoided any highest yoga tantra because, you know, Geshe-la is really pretty, you know, if you're going to take an initiation, keep the commitment. Okay. And I just knew I was a lazy bugger and I probably wouldn't keep the commitment, so I didn't do it. Well, in the summer of 2013, Chodron Rinpoche was offering Highest Yoga Tantra Initiation, and I asked Geshe-la if it would be good if I did it, and he said, oh, yes, go for it. So I did. Well, something changed there. I don't know what. I mean, I'd like to say all these things. I was so aware of my mind that I could tell you what happened, but no. And I came home from that, and it was 5 days of teaching afterwards by his student. And I went swimming a lot, and I laid on the couch. And I'm in my trailer. I can't even tell you how wonderful this place is. Breeze coming off this river. You can see 30 feet down. Water's clear as can be. There was this little path I swam, so the fish got used to me, and they would swim with me. And then when I left their territory, another fish would pick up. That summer, I think I released 1,500 minnows. The people at the bait store loved me. And they just, you know, whatever. They would just roll their eyes when this lady came in again to release 500, you know, another. Can I have a pound of minnows, please? I was lying on the couch one afternoon, having awakened from a nap, one of my hour swims, when I just would, you know, come home back to the trailer and crash. And I thought, what do I want to do with the rest of my life, you know? And if there's anything I'd learned from Geshe-la, it was that the only thing I wanted to be was more wisely kind. That's a kind of a baby version of the unity of wisdom and compassion. And that's where I am. I'm in the baby setup. And I didn't know of any better way to do that than to ask for permission to ordain. Because it meant I would let go of a lot of stuff. So I called Geshe-la, and graciously he talked to me, and he said, you know, this really isn't a phone conversation. And I said, yeah, I know. I said, I just wanted to let you know I was done frogging around. And he said, what's that mean? I said, well, you know how many times you've talked to me about this? He said, yeah, Condola. I said, well, I think I'm really serious this time. I think I'm, you know, not going to go find a boyfriend or not go find a place. He just said, well, when are you coming back to Raleigh? So a month later, I was back in Raleigh to talk to him before he left on his break. And people had told me that, you know, I really thought that it was going to be a 2 or 3 year process at the very, very, very minimum. Because people had told me, you know, you'll go to see him and he'll give you practices and you'll go away and do them. And if you complete them, you'll go back and he'll maybe give you more to do and da 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 da. So I was like prepared. So I went to see him and he asked me some very practical questions. You know, it's not, you know, you think, what is your commitment? But very practical questions. And I said, I need to think about it. Come back in a few days. So I went back in a few days, and I went to sit down. And he said, oh, don't sit down. This won't take long. And I'm thinking, well, no, it doesn't take long, you know. And he said, well, I've talked to my teacher, and I thought about it, and we both think it would be very auspicious for you to ordain at Sarah J. in December. This was September of 2013. So he said, do you have a passport? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, you'll need a protected area permit. Get busy. And so I went out to my car and held on to the steering wheel. I really did. It was like... but the point about that is because people, I get asked by people of other faiths, what Geshe-la was very clear about is not that I had a lot of knowledge, because I don't. Not that I had a lot of skill in doing this. I don't. Not that I'm still just as disobedient as I've always been or as rebellious as I've always been. I think he had some confidence in me that my commitment was real. That, you know, I wasn't, you know, I really, really wanted, I truly meant it when I said I wanted to become more wisely kind. So 4 months later, I was in robes. I laughed to myself when Robbie said, please don't give them cards with Buddhist on it. And I laughed. I've moved 8 times in 3 years, 5 times in the last 2 years. I feel like a nun on roller skates. Every time I move, more stuff goes. My resolution with this last move is to say, enjoy it while it's here, and when you leave, if it doesn't fit in the Prius, you're not taking it. And I have a Prius C. So, and what's the journey been like since then? Like all really important things in our lives, you know, I think about when people decide to have children, or they have children and they hadn't formally decided, or they get married, or big life changes, and you think, oh, this is what's going to be wonderful, and this is what's going to be hard, and then you do it, and you discover that what you thought was going to be hard is a piece of cake, and the things that you never expected to be hard, you know, just grab you and throw you to the mat. I mean, I'll acknowledge today I was in a parking lot yesterday, and there was somebody talking to someone in front of me. You know, the car was stopped, and they were talking, and it was a very difficult situation to be waved around, but they, you know, they waved me around, and I'm thinking to myself, my first thought was, well, that's pretty rude using the parking lot as your living room. And then I thought, no, you're not supposed to have thoughts like that. You're supposed to equanimity. They're just trying to be happy, da-da-da-da. So things anywhere from how many times a day still bite me just because I became a nun. And they will continue to do so. I wouldn't trade the journey at this point for anything. I don't know where it's going to go. I can't say I ordained for, you know, people, he talked about a bodhicitta attitude. I'm first on my bodhicitta list in terms of sentient beings being happy. I mean it, you know. I would like to say to Rabina, and did I ordain because I wanted to help all sentient beings? I was a social worker for 30 years. I was done with that. I really did it because this was the best way I could be happy. And more mornings than not, I wake up happy, and so far, as I said to Robbie, the Sangha squad has not shown up at my door saying, we've gotten a bad report, we want the robes back. I'm still just, and I'll finish with one funny story. When I was at Sarah J, there was a very proper nun there. I think most people have met her, Thupten Children. She's very, and lives very, very pure vows. And so they asked me when I was going to go for full ordination, and I said, novice vows are just fine, thank you very much. If I can do this for the rest of this lifetime without too much problem, I'll be really happy. And I said, anyways, I don't want to give up swimming. I'm one of the official ones. And she said, well, it doesn't matter if you go on or not, you can't swim now anyways. So I was really, really, I was just quiet. So the next day, Jesse Songpo, just talking to some people, Thupten Children isn't there. And he said, well, you should have seen Kandala yesterday. Somebody told her she couldn't swim. A nun told her she couldn't swim. I don't think she breathed for an hour. Well, that was one of the things that when I go back to this, when I asked Geshe-la, you know, he said to me, well, what are you afraid of about ordination? I said, I can't give up swimming, Geshe-la. Not yet. Not yet. And he said, oh, it's too good for your mind, Kandala. Don't worry about it. So, that may not seem funny to anybody else, but I still soak myself in water frequently. But it's about the opportunity. It's about the opportunity to try to serve. And it's an opportunity to try and be happy. They laugh at me. I'm terrible at ritual. I still can't do any of the mudras. Geshe Songpo is like pretty much given up. as Rabina said, when I was asked to lead a chant one day, she looked at Sarah, who used to be here, and said, "You are going to sing loudly, aren't you, dear?" So what I want to say about being Sangha is that all of us are really, 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 really different. And yet the robes fit all of us. And I'm really grateful to be here. I wouldn't be here without the center. And I think I've chattered long enough. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Could you... Could you tell us just a little bit about your ordination ceremony, since you did travel halfway around the world?
Actually a very funny story.
Okay.
So, my ordination was on December 13th, 2013, and this is the kindness of them. They came to me and said, well, we planned the ordination for this day because it's an auspicious day, but we know in America Friday the 13th is not an auspicious day. Are you okay with that? And I said, I'm in India, don't worry about it. You know, so they went forth, and so I've been told that monks and nuns are treated very differently. For example, if a 6-year-old novice monk walked in and ordered me to get him something to drink at this moment, it would be my responsibility to do that. There's kind of a hierarchy there. And we won't get into all the, but it's just historical, and so I knew they were treated very differently. So I ordained with, 13 other people, young monks from Sarah J. They ranged in age from age 17 to probably 6 or 7 or 8. They had taken Rabjung, which is the renunciation part but this was novice vows, and so we were all taking it together. And they had taken me to the monk's store so I could get my robes, you know, because they shave your head and put you in robes before you go to the ceremony. So I'd been to the monk's store a couple of days before, and they'd done that for me. And then they taught me how to put on my robes, which was another great humorous event. And I managed my worst image, my worst thing about ordination was there's no buttons on these things, you know. I mean, you know, they just fold and tie. And I'm going to be walking down the street, and the knots are going to come out, and my robes are going to fall off. So I walk around like this. So I'm with these very proper, wonderful young men, young people, and of course I'm the oldster and the only woman there. And it was all in Tibetan. And Geshe Songpo was trying to tell me a little bit in English of what's going on, and he would poke me and say, nod. And I don't remember, there was a word yes, there was a word for yes, and I remember what it was. Okay. And they had pretty much told me what I was committing to beforehand, but I didn't understand much of it. Probably one of the most beautiful parts of the ceremony is two people are designated as kind of your spiritual friend support. And if I'd stayed in the monastery, we would have probably come quite close. And you are kind of over this bowl of plenty, and you put your hands on top of each other, and you kind of make a commitment to support each other in your vows. And that was a really, really special moment for me. But then it came to getting your name. Okay, and this is the fun. And then they said, go, it's all over, and anticlimactic. And one of the things with ordination is you don't find out a lot about what you're supposed to do until afterwards. They just want to know your commitment is clear, and then they'll tell you what's going to happen. So I guess Geshe Songpo says, go back to the Sarah J. House 6A for lunch. And I said, okay. And he said, just remember, you can't have anything after lunch. And he said, well, I want to know, do you want to do it for 3-7 or for the rest? Three days. Am I good?
Maybe give her a hand, Mike. Yeah.
Thanks. Sorry. Is this good? Okay. So, that I would not eat, not after Solana, but I wouldn't eat after my midday meal, whether it was 11, 12, or 1 or whatever, I wouldn't eat until breakfast the next morning. And I said, I'll go for 7 days. And he said, and that means no gum. I said, okay, guess he's hungry. So they shooed me off, and I'd gotten this little sheet of paper saying with Tibetan and then saying Nawang Kondo. And people said, what is your name? And I said, well, here it is. And they said, well, that's not right. That's spelled wrong. And I said, oh. And all the other guys got these pieces of red paper gold cards with red, beautiful red cards with gold lettering, and I got this little white card with black lettering, and I thought, well, they told me nuns and monks are different. This is the start. And so finally, after 4 days of people telling me my name was wrong, that it should be Kadro, and it couldn't be Kondo, that they'd made a mistake, I went to Geshe Songpo, and I said, Geshe Songpo, and I showed him a card, and I said, what's my name? And Geshe Songpo said, it's Kondo. I said, okay. And then he said, well, they forgot a woman was ordaining. And so they didn't have a female name, and that's what he said to me, that's why it was on this little torn card that was the back of the back of a pad. I still have it. And I have to tell you, the day I walked around the monastery, I'd been out for a walk, and I didn't know you were never supposed to take off your zen inside the monastery. So it was hot. India. I was walking around without my zen. Guys from the monks from House 26A would drop like pilot, you know, drop out of the air and say, what are you doing, Kondo? I'm going for a walk. Where's your zen? It's in my bag. Put it on. Oh, I think it's time for you to go back to the house. By the end of the time I was there, they would just laugh, you know, when I tried to hand an envelope directly to Ken Rinpoche. I mean, the mistakes. Now, what I rejoice about that and what I want to say about that is that what I loved about it is they corrected all the mistakes, but they laughed. And even though I was embarrassed, I didn't feel lower than whale poop because I made a mistake, you know? And that is something for me that I aspire to every day, that we all make mistakes, sometimes with good intentions, sometimes with not so good intentions. But it's all redoable, and that's what keeps me going. And I'm just so grateful for that opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you. Would you entertain a few questions?
Sure.
Let's pass a mic.
Sorry to be so long.
No, that's great. Thank you. Yeah, this is being streamed to millions and millions of people around the world.
This is sort of, I'm over here, sort of an easy question.
Okay, we're in the back first, okay, yeah. And then we'll come up here.
Thank you, first of all, for sharing your experiences with us. They're precious. Second, my question is very sort of simple. What's up with swimming? Like, why could you not swim? What's the deal with that?
Okay, well, it makes sense historically. And one of the things that I'm really appreciative about Geshe is that he looks at the Vinaya, and he's very committed to the Vinaya, which is our code of behavior, but realizes what was time-sensitive. If you think about it, an ordained woman 2,500 years ago going swimming, there weren't any pools in India. It wasn't a safe thing to do. Now, there's other things about you could hurt another sentient being because you're swimming in the water and you're moving the water. Well, and I know that's true, but I can't walk from here to the parking lot without hurting a sentient being. But I think the flexibility of it has to do with the fact that, monks are allowed to travel alone. Nuns are supposed to not travel alone. It's one of our vows because it wasn't safe. So I think at the time, it has more to do with historical? Thank you.
Hello? I think I misheard or misunderstood part of your explanation earlier when you were talking about your process of ordination. You said that you did not or you declined to take full ordination. So I'm wondering what the difference is and how many different levels there might be.
Yeah, maybe you could explain that for people.
I think I'll try to do that succinctly and maybe accurately, and probably Robbie can correct me, or another nun might be able to. So the first level of ordination is what they call Rabdrung, which is renunciation, which means they shave your head and you get the privilege of wearing robes, and you essentially commit to the five, what we would call the lay vows, or the precepts, okay? And that's when the monks come in, when the young men, like 5 or 6, come into the monastery, that's the level that they take until they make the commitment. The next level is novice vows, and that's what I took. With the other, I took Rabjung and the novice vows all in one day. They were taking just novice vows, which are, there's 10 vows, and that kind of the long version of those 10 vows is 36. Most of them you're familiar with. They're, you know, things like, you know, no killing, no, all of the things that we, if we take the 5 lay vows, and then a few more. Then there's a next level of vows, which is where you make another higher level of commitment and more vows. And do you commit to the 200? Well, if you're a male, it's 263. If you're female, it's like 360 something. And then after kind of a period of living in that, you take your final vows, which is full ordination. At this time, there's no full ordination in the Tibetan tradition for women. So anyone who is fully ordained, like Rabina or Venerable Tendrin, who will be coming back, they do it in another tradition. The Chinese have full ordination for women.
There's been a break in the continuity.
There was a break. There's a break in the continuity. And so there's the 17th Karmapa says he will ordain women in his lifetime. In the Tibetan tradition, the Dalai Lama, I think, is very in favor of it, mm-hmm. but he is unwilling to cause any disharmony among the traditions. He's, you know, walked a very careful path. And I just personally, you didn't ask this, I'm just so happy to be in robes. I'm so happy Geshe-la said yes. If this is all I get in this lifetime, yippee.
Other questions?
Hi, I'm Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
I'm going to ask this. I'm real young at this walk, like 2-3 months, and one of the things I like about it is, encourage you, everything you hear in the Dharma, it encourages you to find it out for yourself and question it. So, just a logical question, because I'm not a monk, so I don't know. It seems like you take some vows, mm-hmm. some stuff, and it, from my head, constricts to do that. Do you find that, or is it just I'm not getting it?
Oh, no, you're really getting it. Okay. You're really getting it. There was a time when, after I'd gotten sober, that I thought I'd become a Catholic nun. They didn't want me. I was much too rebellious. So it was wise on, and I was also too old. They had an age limit. So it was very wise on their part, and bless them, they were part of the causes and conditions that I got to be a Tibetan Buddhist nun. I'll say two things. I'll say one thing about Buddhism in general and one thing and something else about being in robes. Tibetan, as the Buddha said, don't take anything I say on just because I'm saying it. Check it out. Check it out. Does it work for you? Does it work in your mind? Does it work for you? And if you really find I'm wrong, then it's your job to correct me and prove to me how and why I'm wrong. Okay. So one of the challenges about that in terms of kind of questioning stuff is if I was a chemist, if I was a student of chemistry and somebody put an equation, a chemical equation on the board, and I knew nothing about chemistry, no matter how much I thought about it, I couldn't tell you if it was right or wrong. So the challenge for me is, do I know enough to really explore this and find out if it's right or wrong? So I just keep kind of practicing and seeing where it fits. But I really always appreciated the commitment to inquire. And not just to inquire, but if it truly doesn't work for you, that's why the Buddha had 84,000 teachings.
because there's one in his kit that will fit. Or at least I found that to be true. About being a nun, people think of poverty, chastity, and obedience, you know, with the big thing on the big O, obedience. Okay. It's kind of both and. I pretty much will do anything Geshe-la tells me to do. Okay. But if I truly thought it would not be good for me, that's a discussion we have. It's not waist deep in the big money, muddy in the big fool said to push on. You know, follow orders no matter what. Now, one of the things about that is Geshe-la may tell me to do something that I go, oh. But again, since I believe that he's got what I want, there's a lot of things that I don't think are going to work for me that I become really, really willing to try because I don't know enough not to. But a concrete example is originally I was going to go to India and study, you know, after I ordained. Well, I had a mini meltdown in India. And Geshe Sangpo said, "What's wrong, Kondo?" And I said, "Nothing's wrong." He said, "What's wrong, Kondo? Nothing's wrong. What's wrong, Kondo?" I said, "I'm worried about being a good nun." He says, "No, that's not it, Kondo. What's wrong?" And I said, "I don't want to live in India." "I don't think I can do it." And so, of course, I never said that to Geshe-la, but of course I got back to him. Well, I think I'm still here. I'm not in India. So there's this great kindness about, you know, what's going to help me practice. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Susie.
Quick question. I've always wanted to know what, do all novices have the same routine, daily ideas? Like, how do you structure your day? And
absolutely not.
A day in the life of a nun.
Okay. Tendrin Law and I are going to be a nunlet. Well, there's a nunnery, but since there's only two of us, we're going to be a nunlet. That was my fifth move in 2 years. I am now going to be living in a townhouse with Venerable Tendrin when she gets here. Lamala begins about 5:30 in the morning. Tendrin and I probably won't begin before 8. Okay, so it varies. If I was in a nunnery or a monastery, you know, or on, you know, then there would be, I would, like if I went to stay at Srivasti Abbey with Thupten Shodron, which, you know, is, I may do at some point, I would, my commitment being there is I would follow the schedule of the abbey. And prayers are done at certain times, study and work are done at certain times and stuff. So, that's going to be one of the benefits for me being with Tendrin Law, because one of the hard things about being Western Sangha is when you do live alone and you want to roll over, there's nobody that says get out of bed, and you know, Buddha doesn't, you know, he hasn't tapped me on the shoulder yet to say, come on, Kondola, get up. And so there's structure. But I have certain practices I attempt to do each day, but the time of day doesn't matter. Geshe-la's recommendation is that you have most of your practices done before 4 in the afternoon, because, and especially morning is good for the mind. So that's, you know, that's kind of the guidance I try to follow. Does that make sense in terms of...
Yes, and so maybe Tendrin Law would have more practices than you, or different.
I'm sure she has much more than I do. I went to Geshe-la one time and I said, you know, I don't take a lot of initiations, and you know, and he says, well,
And he says, well, that's good. I've never been, you know, there's some people that have many, many initiations and many, many commitments. I have my commitments as, you know, keeping my vows, and I have some commitments with initiations. But I don't have 5 or 6 higher tantric initiations with, you know, long commitments to each of them. I don't.
Yeah, I'm not even familiar with what that would entail.
Right.
However, it's very individual. So that's great.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kelly, do you have one? No. Oh. Okay.
And to be really honest, guys, I'm a wimpy nun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a wimpy nun. I really am.
Okay. Other questions? Ask the nun. Okay. We have a microphone. She's on the hot seat.
Dial a nun. Is that a 900 number?
Yeah.
Would you please tell us about the different parts of your robes? I'm always curious about that because they're different from Catholic robes.
Sure. We'll have show and tell.
For me to take off my Zen in the Zen book. Okay. So it's called a Zen. It is not part of the sacred rope. I mean, these are, this and this are considered very precious, okay? The Zen is, there's 3 parts. Official robes are 3
is
parts.
Is this like a mic on?
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Thank you.
So this is the Zen. It's very important when you're in the Gompa and you're receiving teachings because it's disrespectful to have your left shoulder showing. You know, you always see us with that. And so it's part of that tradition in terms of respect. For the rest of it, for the traveling monks, it's your raincoat. It's your blanket. It's your sunscreen. You know, you'll see pictures of Geshe Tsongpo very often. Like,
and he'll pull up like this, you know, to be out of the sun and stuff. So that's the Zen. What? Oh, it's your sneak. Yeah, like you'll see them, you know, when they're making offerings here, to not breathe or whatever. Or you'll see Geshe Tsongpo when he's teaching going like this. So it's an all-purpose. It's an all-purpose garment. So again, I'm a lazy nun. This is called a danka. Okay, you can see where it's stitched here. And stitched. I have a friend who wonderfully stitched them. Usually they would just, it would usually just cross here and it would be tucked in. And the only thing that would keeping it crossed would be how tight my robes were tied, okay? I looked very carefully at the monks to see did they always have this tucked in? You know, was it always supposed to be tucked in? But I've watched Geshe Tsongpo and Geshe, and a lot of times it's not tucked in. So, and Geshe saw this one day and said, oh, that's very efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the robes have, this is called a shantab, and it's basically a big tube. If I held it up this way, you know, it'd be, you know, double. It's four feet, okay? And it has 4 folds in it. And that's what, when all the nuns talk about taking 20 minutes to get out of their room, what they're talking about is when you put this robe on, this shantab on, so the big tube goes over your head, and so you go like this, and you, so you have... Go. 2 folds going this way, 2 folds going forward, and 2 folds going back for the 4 Noble Truths. If the Dalai Lama wears a shantab that is
6 feet across, so essentially it's 12 feet of fabric, and there's six folds in it. There's two more folds in it. Not because he has higher vows. It's an older custom from Tibet. And so that's what I wear. And so there's the mystery is, when I talked about, is this is just tied, okay? So if this knot came out, this would just drop off. And that wouldn't be good. And there is a reason, this, like this is another funny story. I had a roommate when I was in India when I ordained, a nun, a very experienced nun who was there. And so I was taking my shantab off one night and I went to drop it and step out of it. I thought she was asleep. She came bolt right out of the bed and said, "No, no, 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 no." And I said, "What?" She said, "You always take it off over your head. You know, because it would be disrespect. It's, you know, part of your robe, disrespectful to." And I said that to Geshe Thangpo, you know, later. And that's the Tibetan thing. He says to me, "Oh, that is my fault, Kandala. I forgot to tell you that." You know, and just kind of laughed and stuff. So it doesn't matter where I am or what I do. After the way she came off the bed, man, there is no way. I mean, so, sorry. But that, okay. Does that answer your question? And then well, you'll see us, if we're in formal teachings, we have a yellow thing that has tons of patches on it. There's a name for that, and I can't remember it. Chugi. Yeah, and that's, you wear that for formal teachings. Geshe is very informal. A lot of Geshe's would wear that every Sunday, which means that all of the nuns would need to wear that every Sunday. And since I hate heat, I am really glad Geshe doesn't wear it every Sunday. Thank you.
Yeah, can you tell them what you sit on?
Oh, well, Dingwa. Okay, so. There you go. So, in the monastery, when you see all the little monks and monklets running to get to prayers in the morning, because if they don't show up for prayers in the morning, they don't get breakfast, okay? You know, it's real simple. That's where breakfast is served. They've got this over their shoulder, running like this. So, to protect the monastery, to protect the property of the monastery, everybody puts this down and sits on it, okay? Mine is an inexpensive version, I guess, from the monk store, and it doesn't have an opening. So if you're ever helping set things up, Donna, would you? You will see there is, if this was a more formal dingwa, see, Donna, the... To be in a nun in next lifetime, who knows more about the Dharma than I do, and being a nun, this would have an opening, and for some reason that opening always goes towards the desk or towards the Buddha. So, and it's to be open to the teachings, I believe. That's the catch. Okay? Thank you for reminding me about that.
I have two questions. One, whenever you see a monk, well, a Dalai Lama, they're right... shoulder is always uncovered. Is there a reason for that? And the other is there something about the knots or the way the cloth is cut about tiger's teeth?
Oh. You mean this?
Yeah.
Yes.
But this is, these are the fangs of death.
Yes.
Karima, always remind me about, toys remind me about death.
Yes.
And see, and that's where see, really this should be open all the way to here, but so I don't have to wear so much heavy clothes underneath, I kind of stitched it along there and Geshe went very efficient. So, now, I'm so grateful for Geshe because there's other teachers that would not allow me to do that, and I'm really grateful. So he allows me to be a little bit comfortable. And the right arm is, that's respectful, and the left is covered. Again, in the left hand and arm are all of the nasty care parts of your body. And so that's why you cover that when you're in teachings or out of respect. Make sense? again, cultural, but we still do it.
Okay. Thank you.
What? Oh, the blue. The blue, what, how many sangha have to be in a country for everything to be alive for? Well, there was a point at which in Tibet that I can't say Genghis Khan because he was Buddhist, but the ordination, all the monks had been killed and there weren't enough people to ordain, and the Chinese sent monks so that there could be a full quorum for ordination. And the blue on the robes is in memory and appreciation for the fact that the reason there is full ordination in Tibet is the generosity of the Chinese Buddhist monastic community.
Okay. Thank you very much, Venerable Khandu. So that's all our time, but today is a day to rejoice in the presence of Robe Sangha here at Kadampa Center, and it's always appropriate to say thank you to them. So we say thank you very much, Venerable Khandu. But having Robe Sangha here really means the center is alive, and we have the continuity with the great traditions that they embody. So it's something we can all rejoice in. So we'll finish up by doing the Shanti Deva dedication on page 246 in the prayer book. In particular, we want to thank of Venerable Tendrin's father who died yesterday. And tomorrow, what happens tomorrow, Donna?
Tomorrow is Chokor Duchin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we will begin, correct me if I'm wrong, Patrick, the center will be open from 5 a.m. until 5 p.m. for people to do practice. At 5:30, there will be an opportunity to take the 8 Mahayana precepts, if you've taken them before, and then we will have a light breakfast and a reading of the which sutra? Diamond Cutter Sutra. So you are, and it's a particularly auspicious day. It's a Buddha holy day, which means all of your karma, both negative and positive, multiplies 100 million times. So you want to make it as positive as you can.
Okay. And then on Sundays for the rest of the summer, we'll have a smorgasbord of different topics led by different people. So they're going to be. Yes, there will be no 9 a.m. sessions during the month of August until Labor Day, just the 10:45 session.
What about next Sunday?
Next Sunday. 26th,
will there be
a 9 a.m.? No.
Okay.
Yeah, just 10:45. Okay, and we'll do the Shanti Deva dedication on page 246. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, and as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Okay. Thank you again, Venerable Khandu. That was fascinating, yes. And we'll have a sign-up sheet for those who want to take ordination out in the lobby. Come on, guys.